It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Just a signpost here, as the impact of COVID-19 grows, WPR continues to bring you coverage of news as it happens from our reporters stationed around the state. We've centralized our coronavirus content. It's all at WPR.org/COVID. Right now, we're talking about COVID-19 symptoms and treatment. The CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, it added 6 symptoms this week to its coronavirus list. New to the CDC's list are chills, repeated shaking with chills, muscle pain, headache, sore throat, and new loss of taste or smell. And these have been added to the original list that had 3 symptoms: shortness of breath, cough, and fever. Have you recovered from COVID-19? Are you battling it right now? What are your symptoms and treatment like? Healthcare teams, are you treating patients in your hospital? What can you tell us about what you're facing? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Joseph Padaruca is chair of the intensive care unit in the Department of Pediatrics at Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse. He's also the principal investigator for the Convalescent Plasma Expanded Access Program at the Mayo Clinic in southwest Wisconsin. Dr. Padaruca, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
What is the situation like at your hospital right now? What are you seeing?
You know, what we're seeing is really an effect of some early intervention by our governor to flatten the curve with the stay-at-home order. We had planned to ramp up, including a tiered surge plan for our hospital, harnessing and leveraging all of our resources. But fortunately, we haven't seen the big wave such that you're seeing in New York, Washington. But we've been able to use those lessons we've learned from those other hospitals to provide optimal care and also to come up with ways to treat our patients.
What are some of those lessons learned that you're finding from your colleagues in other states and other parts of the world?
Some of those have to do with clinical management, and some of those have to do with how we take care of our patients and staff and protect them. Some of the unique interventions that have been and lessons taught involve how we provide ventilation for these patients and also how we manage other medical complications that evolve. So these patients who get very sick, they may require paralysis to give them optimal ventilation and lung recovery. They also, we've noticed that they develop clots that can lead to strokes or clots in the lungs, and we've been prompted to use some blood thinning medications to prevent that. As far as patients, family, visitors, we've ramped up how we look at using personal protective equipment to keep our hospital staff safe and also to avoid transmission in the community.
Do you find that you have enough gloves, enough masks, enough shields?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. You know, that PPE, as we call it, that protective equipment, is a very limited resource, and it's been leveraged to hot spots in the country. We've come up with conservation efforts to preserve that and also recycle that in some cases for repurposing. Also key to preserving PPE is the use of virtual technology. So we have video cameras in the rooms, iPads and tablets. We've done some unique things like bringing their pumps and their ventilators outside the room to limit that need for healthcare workers to go in the room and waste that valuable resource.
So I can probably see you're stringing a lot of things across and out in a hallway to get access to equipment so you're not having to go inside the room itself.
Exactly. And that's a protective measure not only for our staff, but also, again, to preserve those resources.
We're talking with Dr. Joe Padaruca, who chairs the intensive care unit at Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse. He's also the assistant professor of medicine and pediatrics in the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine and Science. Taking your questions about treatment and about symptoms of COVID-19, join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Padaruca, it seems like the American public has been very much up in your business about the treatment protocols that are emerging with these very ill patients? You know, there was so much talk about ventilators at first as being these life-saving devices for these patients. Now there's been more of this trend of less invasive and maybe less risky therapies. What is your take on ventilators as it stands now?
Yeah, I think it's evolved how we look at that resource. We understand that patients, if you let them go too long, they can damage their lungs just by the effort of their breathing and by delaying and leading to other medical problems in their body system. So we have looked to possibly ramp up our support for the respiratory tract. One method is flipping them on their stomach while they're awake to provide oxygenation. We also, in some select cases, if we know it's very severe, we'll try for an early intubation, meaning putting the breathing tube in the throat, putting them on the ventilator. The idea is that we allow their lungs time to heal because we're capturing that severe illness up front and allow them to be liberated from the ventilator much more easily. We've also had some novel therapies come through. You may have heard in the news that remdesivir, that medication targeting the virus production. And this is actually pretty huge. We've seen, as the early studies show in this phase 3 trial, clinical trial, a 31%, one-third improvement in the day towards resolution of symptoms, and then a trend towards reduction in mortality from 12 to 8%. If the study had been powered, meaning more numbers of patients, that would have been a significant result. We also have that plasma, so the plasma from recovered victims. Again, this being sort of a novel virus, we didn't have a lot of medications. The body had not seen it before in the human species. So getting the recovered antibodies from another recovered person and having this available through our health system as an option has been very intriguing. We used this in that SARS in 2013. It showed some benefit. So we have consented some patients here, and I know some patients in Wisconsin have received this recovered donor plasma.
We're going to talk more about convalescent plasma in a moment. Going back to remdesivir for a moment, was this originally designed to treat Ebola disease? And are researchers looking to other disease treatment methods to try to inform how they go about, you know, trying to find something that will work against COVID-19?
Yeah, so drugs like this have been used for viral processes, including Ebola, and it really has to do with the mechanism of action, how the drug works. It really targets how the virus replicates itself using RNA. And trying to come up with novel therapies to something we really haven't dealt with before, these clinical trials have evolved, remdesivir being one of the first ones. We've also looked at the use of some of those other medications like hydroxychloroquine. However, those results have not been very promising, with many trials cut short due to the heart arrhythmia risk factors that can potentially lead to early death or bad arrhythmias in patients.
And as a cardiologist, I'm sure that really concerns you as well.
Yeah, a lot of these drugs that we use, unfortunately, for viruses are on the hit list, if you will, the long QT hit list. That's one of the intervals in the cardiac cycle. And they can cause problems, including lethal arrhythmias like ventricular fibrillation or ventricular tachycardia. And it's really hard to screen these patients up front. There's also a lot of drug-drug interactions that could potentiate these bad heart rhythms. They also have some other side effects that can sometimes suppress your immune system, which may sound counterintuitive, while also trying to target what we think will be detrimental to the virus.
We have an email here. Bill from Green Lake emailed to ask, what does Wisconsin's curve look like now, and how is it flattening, and what do you see there?
You know, that's a great question. I will say that we are seeing the effects in our hospitals in Wisconsin of the early stay-at-home orders by the governor. This is different than other states, and it has a lot to do with population density. Milwaukee being an exception. And as we expand out this stay-at-home order with the schools closed, business closed, we expect to see smaller numbers and really fewer deaths than our neighboring states. And I think our Midwest colleagues, Minnesota, Illinois, have kind of come together to understand what the importance of the social distancing is. And as we've seen in the media, there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of frustration. You know, small business owners want to open up. People want to get out of their houses and you know, enjoy the weather and be liberated from really this time out in our human life here. But really, this is not the time. And there's a specific route that the government, the U.S. government, has set forward to reopen states. And our local government, our state government, is following that to a T. And I really think we are seeing vastly decreased numbers. We are flattening the curve compared to other states. It's really impressive.
The CDC came out with these new symptoms, additional symptoms this week, the 6 new symptoms. What do you see there? Are there newer symptoms arising in patients, or is this just expanding out what doctors have seen previously?
That's a great question. So those principal symptoms up front, 73% having a fever, 2/3 having muscle cramps, and then, 15 to 20% having this loss of smell. I would caution people to use that spectrum of symptoms that they come off with as a screening mechanism, and really look towards those big three: the fever, muscle cramps, shortness of breath. Now, the interesting thing with that loss of taste and smell.
And I want to pause right there with loss of taste and smell, because I want to get into that with Dr. Joe Padaruca, who stays with us. He chairs the ICU unit at Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse. Taking your questions, we'll be back in just a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The CDC this week added 6 symptoms to its novel coronavirus list. We're talking about it with pediatric cardiologist Joe Padaruca, who chairs the ICU unit at Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse. He's also a principal investigator for the Convalescent Plasma Expanded Access Program at Mayo Clinic in southwest Wisconsin. Dr. Padaruca, as you were talking there about losing the taste and smell, a little bit more on that particular symptom?
Yeah, absolutely. Isn't that kind of a curious symptom to have?
Yeah.
It calls to mind one of the unique and vastly important differences in SARS-CoV-2 compared to SARS-2003. Patients with COVID-19, their peak shedding is 24 hours prior to them developing pure symptoms. And there's some anecdotal evidence that this loss of taste and smell may be one of the early symptoms that may be preceding the onset of these significant symptoms, fever, muscle cramps. So, in fact, maybe that might be one of the early symptoms, even the more asymptomatic patients. They're looking at that more, but it is a very curious symptom and one that should call to mind patients to possibly be assessed and tested.
Let's bring in a call now. Rita is with us from Green Bay. Hi, Rita.
Good morning. I want to thank you, Doctor, for all your hard work. I know it's always challenging in these new situations to, the whole world is a spectrum of where do we begin. I'm wondering about the challenges of the people who come in with these heavy symptoms and the number of challenges you face, because these people are coming in with multiple issues already going on in their body, blood pressure issues, heart, stroke, diabetes. It's one thing for a person who's struck with an illness and they have no underlying illnesses, but how much more challenging are you finding it when you're dealing with glucose sugars in the bodies, or maybe leg issues with someone?
Some pre-existing conditions. Thank you so much, Rita.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. And the majority of patients that we're seeing that are having the COVID-19 positivity do have chronic disease, heart disease, lung disease, diabetes. Some are on immunosuppressive medications for various things. These patients are at risk. So when we're trying to manage these patients, the second hit of a novel destructive virus in the background of an already chronic illness makes the burden of treatment that much more difficult and the burden of recovery that much more challenging for the patient. So we're faced with not only treating the virus, but also treating those other illnesses that may be even precipitated to decline by the coronavirus itself. We know that it can lead to multi-organ failure, cause strokes, clots in the lungs, the legs, body, can lead to other issues with the gut, kidney failure, heart failure. We're seeing some cases of a myocarditis. This is not a virus that a person that's susceptible is going to handle easily, and will need expert medical care to move ahead.
Rita, thank you. Let's bring in Dwayne now in Weston with a question. Hi, Dwayne.
Oh, good morning. Good morning, Joe. Did you hear of the research study from China early on about the type O blood? They said they studied the blood types and less people with type O were getting less severe symptoms or maybe even not getting it at all, even if they're exposed to it. And do you think that's why there's such a range of severe symptoms of some people not, you know, getting it, not feeling fine? I mean, are all like coronaviruses can have that range of, like if you get type A influenza, is everybody getting really sick or some are no symptoms at all? Why is this one where there's some no symptoms and some are dying?
Yeah, Dwayne, great question. And what does blood type have to do with it, if anything?
Yeah, you know, certain populations across the world are predisposed to different blood types. We know that some patients maybe have an easier time with recovering from challenging illnesses. We haven't seen that pave out in the literature looking at specific blood types as a protective factor for COVID-19. But I think there needs to be more research ahead on that.
It seems like there is so much different research going on all at the same time. Another area that we've been seeing is CPAP machines emerging more frequently now, a device that had been used for sleep apnea patients. How might these machines be used?
Yeah, that's a good question. So if someone's in respiratory distress and their oxygen levels are low, that machine is really better than using simple oxygen by a mask or nasal cannula. It provides a little bit of pressure support. However, this should not be used as a bridging to avoid going to the hospital. There's also the side effect that it can be sort of an aerosol-generating procedure, if you will, meaning that it can generate these tiny little virus droplet particles that could be very easily transmissible and can be projected greater than 2 meters away from a patient and possibly infecting someone else. Remember, for every one patient that has coronavirus, 5 to 7 people that they know or come in contact with will become infected. So it's just important that we don't use that as a crutch to delay hospital care and understand that that does put patients and families and the community at risk to use that routinely.
Let's bring in Mark now in Kimberly with a question. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I think there's need for more transparency from hospitals to know what your local hospital is doing with the convalescent patient plasma. You know, you say you're part of the expanded use program or...
Yeah, and Mark, I want to, let's pause right there and get more information on the convalescent plasma program and how that is working at your hospital.
Yeah, so that's a good question. So the plasma is used for really the sickest of the sick. We're talking about patients in the ICU on the ventilator that has specific findings, including multi-organ failure. It's a precious, limited resource. Fortunately, as more people recover, we're going to get a greater pool for that resource. And, you know, I'd really encourage, at least here in Wisconsin, if you have had a positive test, if you have recovered, that you go and donate your plasma. Versiti is our really our blood bank for Wisconsin. They have different sites, including in your local community. And it would just take a simple phone call, patient instigated, to become a donor.
How effective are these transfusions for patients who need this plasma? Do we know the effectiveness?
You know, we have those small case series from SARS 2003, which showed some benefit, earlier time to recovery, et cetera. It was not really trialed to show a mortality benefit. But when you think about the physiology of this, this is a robust medical, novel, cutting-edge therapy. You're taking recovered antibody from another human being in a novel virus that hasn't been seen before and giving it to another person. You're giving them a fresh immune system. In the absence of really reliable drugs up until remdesivir, as we understood yesterday, this would be an exciting intervention.
In the last moments we have with you, what do you want us to understand about the pandemic from the healthcare team perspective and about how you're operating in your hospital?
Yeah, so I know those in the community and in Wisconsin, it's frustrating times not to go to the stores and the restaurants and being stuck in your house. But really, you're keeping patients safe. You're keeping the community safe. You're protecting us, the frontline healthcare workers, including nursing, respiratory therapists, lobotomists, et cetera. We are in a pandemic. These are scary times. Look for the helpers. We are the helpers. We are ready. We want to serve. We want to do our duty. And we are the people that want to run into the fire and take this head on. So while it's frustrating, the setback, the comeback will be better than the setback. So just keep that in mind as we look ahead. And, you know, we're really honored to serve patients in these scary times.
Dr. Paderewka, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
You too. Dr. Joseph Paderewka chairs the ICU and pediatrics departments at Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse. He's also the principal investigator for the Mayo's convalescent plasma program in Southwest Wisconsin. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Coming up next hour, caller only, getting your ideas for segments in the future. 800-642-1234. Back after this news update on the Ideas Network.